I call to order the Higher Education Policy and Finance Committee. We do have a quorum, and we'd like to begin by somebody offering the amendments, or not the amendments, the minutes for the April 6th meeting. Do I hear a motion?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Oh, there he is. This room is like stereo. I thought it came from over here. Representative Lehan moves the minutes of April the 6th. Any discussion? Any questions? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The amendments are the... why do I say that? I'm anxious. The minutes are approved. Okay, members, we have a couple of items of business today, beginning with two bills, and then we'll walk through the omnibus bill as the final item on the agenda. So, first bill up, House File 3438. Representative Daniels. Representative Andrews, you want to move your bill, please?
Yes. Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move my bill for possible inclusion.
House File 3438.
Yes, House File 3438 for possible inclusion, yes.
You proceed.
Thank you. Thank you, committee. Thank you, Chair, for hearing this bill. It involves senior care and getting the right workforce to take care of our seniors now and in the future. I'll just start with, things have kind of changed in the last 20, 30, 40 years in a number of fields. The one I'm most familiar with is manufacturing. Manufacturing 20, 30 years ago was hard labor. It was usually in a not very well lit atmosphere. So sometimes uncomfortable, sometimes very, very wearing on the body. But they've changed all of that. They're much, much better lit. They're much better ventilated. They have robotics that do a lot of the work. There's a lot of systems in place to make sure that everybody is safer. They don't have the problems with carpal tunnel like they used to have. And a lot of things have changed in the last, I say, 20, 30, 40 years. Well, the same is with nursing care. My mother-in-law was in a nursing facility up in Roseville, and it is actually a hospital that's converted into a nursing facility. And when you go in there, into the building itself, into the rooms, it's like a hospital. In my town of Faribault, I have a new senior living complex that's about 3 to 4 years old. And you walk into the main doors, and it's like walking into this grand opening with a big fireplace, wraparound staircase. It looks like the Gone with the Wind movie when you walk in those grand old houses. Beautiful woodworking. Very warm, so much different than my mother-in-law was in, you know, up in Roseville. And then the little town of Medford, so in my district, population maybe 1,000. And they have a little assisted living place down there. And it's more like a museum and all these little shops they have in it. There's one room that's a 50s theme room. All Coca-Cola themed, the furniture is from the 50s, the record players from the 50s, it still works. They have a movie theater in this little place. Just beautiful inside and out. And that's, you know, things are changing for taking care of our seniors. So, but this bill's 3438 is going to attempt to do is to get some funding to Winona State University's Health Force Minnesota project to develop educational materials that will increase awareness of career opportunities in the senior care field. Health Force Minnesota is a partnership between Minnesota State colleges and universities, the healthcare industry, and community groups. Our goal is to continue to address the shortage of paid caregivers in the field of senior care. Last year, we did some really good work to address the retention and training of employees that work in senior care. Our care facilities were able to increase wages, and we were able to enhance some scholarship opportunities for people already in the field of senior care. But more work is needed to attract even more people to that career. As you'll hear, senior care providers continue to struggle to fill positions in their facilities. One of the top reasons we hear about this is there are no applications for the available positions. This tells us that we need to do more to build a pipeline of caregivers to take care of our seniors. This issue will only get worse with the growing numbers of baby boomers reaching the age where they will need care from our senior care providers. Universally requested solution by senior care providers is to grow public awareness to the opportunities of senior care field. The approach I propose will leverage partnership between senior care sector and higher education to develop materials that will elevate and promote the professionalism of caregiving. And I have two testifiers here today, Mr. Chair, Aaron Bowie and Daniel Salisbury, and they have a little more information on the bill as well.
Okay, thank you, Representative Daniels. I was going to add one thing, if they need some records for that record player, have them call me.
45s, Mr. Chair?
Absolutely.
Perfect. I will let Julie know.
All right. Who's going first?
Mr. Chair and committee members, good afternoon. My name is Aaron Bowie. I'm the Director of Government Affairs for Care Providers of Minnesota, here today on behalf of the Long-Term Care Imperative. First, I want to thank Representative Daniels for bringing this bill forward. Minnesota is aging. 60,000 Minnesotans will turn 65 every year through the year 2030. In a few short years, for the first time, there will be more seniors than school-aged children in Minnesota. People are living longer and have more care needs. We know we are facing a shortage of caregivers for our aging population. While the nursing facility reimbursement reform package passed last year has helped with retaining workers, there are still large pockets of the state that struggle with recruitment. Our providers report that one of the main challenges they face in hiring is the lack of applicants for open positions. Vacant positions lead to nursing facilities having to deny admissions to seniors in need of care. This can result in seniors not being able to stay in their home communities when they need the services of a skilled nursing facility. Knowing that our senior population is growing and their demand for services will grow year after year, we need to work toward building and developing the caregiving workforce now. The overarching goal of this bill is to help address the shortage of professional caregivers and to help providers of senior care services recruit the caregiving workforce. We need to help build a pipeline to get people into careers in senior care services so we can address this shortage now and for the future. By developing a campaign to raise awareness of caregiving professions in school-age students, rural communities, and with dislocated workers, we can hopefully start building the future generation of caregivers. The Minsky Centers of Excellence have experience with running a similar type of career promotional campaign through the Dream It, Do It Manufacturing Jobs campaign, which is why we are interested in partnering with them on this initiative. Thanks again to Representative Daniels for bringing this bill forward, and now I'll turn it over to my imperative partner to talk about an example of how the campaign could be funded.
Yeah, welcome. Again, identify yourself for the record, and then hear your testimony.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Danielle Salisbury, and I am also here on behalf of the Long-Term Care Imperative. We do have a draft outline for what this career campaign could look like. This budget is scalable based on the size of the campaign. The three basic buckets of work include creative design work to create the campaign, development and promotion of the campaign materials, and personnel. The campaign would need a career manager that would oversee all aspects of the Older Adult Services public image and career campaign, including research, creative contracts, workforce and education outreach, budget management, and reporting. The second portion would be to create collateral materials, such as posters or brochures, to be available at no charge for workforce centers, schools, and workforce partners. There would also be videos featuring the senior services in high demand. To launch this campaign, implementation kit would be sent to every workforce center, school, and older adult service provider in Minnesota. As a 24/7 vehicle for the campaign, a website could house all of the materials, contain videos and resources, including detailed career profiles, scholarship opportunities, career outlook, and employer connections. To launch this initiative, a paid media campaign will ensure traction and tie to the other resources offered on a local level to these communities. The campaign manager would work in tandem with local employers and workforce partners. Finally, we would create videos outlining the story of employee settings and careers. These videos would have a 7-year shelf life, and in total, we would be able to broadcast the career and elevate the senior care work.
Thank you. Questions? I don't know who to ask, but basically what type of career? We're not looking at nursing necessarily. Am I right or wrong? This is all careers within that area of need?
Mr. Chair, it would be all careers in long-term care, both at nursing facilities, assisted living, and other positions in long-term care.
Representative Rosenthal.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Daniels. I like what is going on here. I like the idea. But I see you have a zero appropriation. What is realistic to get this up and running?
Well, Representative Daniels.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Rosenthal. We bring the bill forth mostly to get the information out there. We feel this is going to be, you know, basically a good blueprint to how to proceed. We have a zero target, as everybody knows, so I'm not expecting to be able to attach any money to it. But a lot of times I know in conference committees things happen, and if this is there as a vehicle, we might be able to, it might work out as a negotiation type of thing. But we realize that at this time there's zero targets, and at least we get the information out, get the ideas out. It's a good place to start, I guess.
Representative Rosenthal.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for that answer. I have a similar bill for aging and fraud that I think you heard.
Yep.
And it was about $500,000. And so is this the ballpark of getting something like this up and running?
Mr. Chair, Representative Rosenthal, we were looking at an approximate budget of $750,000, but again, it is flexible.
Any other questions? Representative Daniels, anything further you'd like to add?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Just thank you for your time, and we know this this tsunami is coming. Everybody's agreed. We work together in the aging committee to try to find solutions. I think this might be one of the solutions that, among many, to make sure that our seniors are taken care of. So, very important piece of the puzzle, and like I said, things have changed. So hopefully we can get some of the people going looking for a career to maybe think about going into the senior care instead of maybe, you know, some other career and be ready for that tsunami. So thank you for your time.
Thank you, testifiers. Thank you very much. House File 3438 will be laid over for possible inclusion. Next, House File 3801. Mr. Eisenhower. I'm sorry. There's similarity there. Representative Isaacson.
Mr. Chair, you should know I am a fan of President Eisenhower, so I appreciate that kind of a...
Sure.
And in an odd piece of trivia, I got permission from his family to use the name Ike.
I noticed.
It's kind of an odd thing, yeah.
I like Ike.
Thanks, I appreciate that. I hope you meant me. That was nice.
One additional piece of trivia, the Glendalough State Park was visited by Eisenhower.
Oh.
So I suggest maybe you do it too sometime soon.
I feel some pressure now.
Okay.
I will I'll get on top of that and report back to you, sir.
It's in my district. I can give you a map.
Well, there's a decent chance I've been there then, if it's in your district.
I can personally take you there.
I appreciate that.
Representative Isaacson, would you like to move?
Your 3801 for possible inclusion, or what are we saying now?
That's it.
Okay, in the omnibus bill.
That's right. Thank you very much. So, proceed.
Thank you. When I first came to the legislature, I was lucky enough to have some really good folks from both sides of the aisle lay out for me many of the issues we're facing in both jobs and education regarding how we connect our high school students to how we connect our high school students to jobs and employers. And I think that's been a real conundrum in some ways, because we have to provide for a way in which we can make sure that they have the opportunities to reach the job possibilities that are out there. And what we have a problem with, and you know, not that I want to digress into a bigger picture question, but we've really focused so much on the four-year liberal arts degree that we've really forsaken the the what we used to call the vocational education of the trades or technical degrees, whatever you want to say, that would provide that an equal footing. And I think that's something we need to make a move towards. One of the ways in which we were brainstorming a couple years ago that we could help solve that problem is if we could create some sort of hub that would allow for us to connect employers with schools, with employees, and that way someone, so for example, my cousins graduated from Underwood, Minnesota, which I believe is in your district, is that?
It is correct.
Shameless pandering for you right there. And graduating from...
I can say a lot about that school. I take too much of your time, so.
Thank you. And when they were both, motorheads. They really liked wrenching and working on trucks and tractors and that kind of stuff. And if this system had been in place, they would have been able to find the best places for them to go to get the best education and training in the state, because it would have had every possible opportunity for them at their fingertips. Not only that, but as they entered the system, that would allow for them to have for employers to find them as well. And so that was kind of a dream and hope that I had. And then about 2 months ago, I was talking with Senator Bonhoff, and we were talking about this idea, and lo and behold, someone was doing it already. And so we talked with for a little while, and she asked me if I'd sponsor 3801 for her. And what it is it's taking a look at a pilot program and examining how would we create such a system that would integrate employers, employees, and schools together to make a one-stop shop for them to find work. And then she made me aware of one company that's doing that so far, and that's Digitalati, who's agreed to come in and just show a presentation of how their system works. And they take it much farther, I think, in being effective. They have successfully worked now with the state of Michigan and Ohio and have done a wonderful job getting people working. So do you need to set up? Are we set up? We have a
little technical help.
Yes, please. So I'm going to have Brian from Digitalati talk a little bit about what the business is doing, and then also what kind of programs they have that might be beneficial to us in terms of how we might use a system like this with our state board. And so I just give you, it should take about 5 minutes or so-ish. All right, so I'll take it over.
All right, please identify yourself then and proceed.
So I'm Brian Valesia with Digitalati. And Mr. Chair and the committee, thank you so much for the time. As Representative mentioned, we've been working within the state of Michigan and the state of Ohio with the U.S. Department of Labor and a number of national foundations.
Hold on 1 second. Are we there? Okay, thank you. Sorry.
To figure out how to better engage both our educational institutions, be that non-traditional education, certificate programs, two-year degree and four-year degree programs, and to better connect them with the job opportunities across those states and a number of regions within those states. What we found was that the labor market is terribly inefficient and requires significant amounts of work on the employer's part to be able to identify candidates, and it becomes very cumbersome for candidates to be able to identify pockets of employment opportunities. And so the result is that about 70% of the jobs in the U.S. occur at small and mid-sized businesses, and those jobs are overwhelmingly hidden from the labor pool itself, because those companies do not have the infrastructure required to post publicly. And so consequently, we're using a lot of friends and family referral programs to find candidates, which means that the vast majority of our candidates never find our jobs. And that we're not actually providing kind of the connectivity in the community that would help us to drive unemployment significantly lower and help our companies to grow faster. So what we did is we built a matching system. We have 5 minutes, so I'll go very, very kind of quickly here. I'll talk as we walk through this. But we worked with the Department of Labor, and we built a correlated matching system. So in the market, there are a lot of efforts to do matching through keyword and contextual search using resumes and job descriptions. We found that, unfortunately, job descriptions are very time-consuming and cumbersome to write. Small businesses don't know where to start, and they tend to not accurately represent the position being posted. And we found that resumes oftentimes introduce unintended biasing to the hiring process that reduce inclusion, diversity, and really prevent the best candidates from finding the right positions. I'll save time here. We'll take a shortcut. I'll copy a previous position so you can see what we did. Basically, the way that we see the world is that job descriptions, the more we looked at job descriptions and resumes, the more we realized that it kind of works. but the way we started, we saw them as being analogous to recipes. So the same ingredients can be used to make bread as can be used to make cake, but varying each ingredient ever so slightly results in a wildly different product. And in the same way, a marketing position is not a marketing position is not a marketing position, and that they all represent similar characteristics, similar areas of functionality, but varying the amount of focus in each of those areas results in a wildly different job or results in a wildly different candidate, and therefore the fit and alignment changes based on those individual characteristics. So essentially, we built people have called it a dating site for jobs, but it does real correlated matching. So we score every opening against every candidate against every opening, and we only show for each party their best 7 correlated matches to help employers to move faster through the process and to help candidates to get exposure to real opportunities that they otherwise might not have considered. So in the state, you have over 150,000 credit active employers, right? So those are companies whose names most of us don't know, but who have great jobs available, and that we need to make sure that we're exposing those companies and those opportunities to candidates at the right time in a very transactional manner.
I don't want to interrupt, but you're the only testifier that I recall that's talked about baking a cake in this committee. I think you got the attention of everybody for at least a split second. So proceed.
And now it will only go down. Yeah.
No cake is actually here. So.
Yeah. So we broke 1,400 job titles down into 80,000 characteristics that describe those job titles, brought in a team of occupational psychologists, and wrote question pairs that help us to describe those positions. Right. So we'll call it social media opening.
I should have one, or it's a little difficult to see this, so just fully describe what you're
talking about. We're just posting a job. I'm copying a previous job I posted, so you don't have to watch me type. But basically, we're posting for a social media position. We put in a general job description, answer kind of the standard compensation benefits package questions, and then the system will take our basic job title and it'll go through the U.S. Department of Labor's ONET job classification system, and it'll identify what job that is closest to. So in this case, we posted a social media opening, so it's recommending a social media professional. And when we hit next, the system will curate for us a survey specifically related to social media professionals. So it'll ask us questions like whether or not the person would prefer to work on a team or the company will have the person work on a team or independently, how much time the candidate would be expected to spend maintaining social media pages, software that the candidate should be expected to use, how much time they expect to sell new ideas internally, how much time they will be developing social media strategy for the company, how much time they'll spend collecting statistical data to measure impact. But so very, very specific to social media work. So that the employer doesn't have to spend a lot of time thinking about this position, but really they're guided to answer these questions and create a very, very accurate representation of what it is that they're looking for. I'll skip the rest of the questions for the sake of time. And I'll put this in. And when I post, what you'll see is that the system will score every candidate against every opening and every opening against every candidate against this opening and this opening against every candidate, and it will pull for us our best matches. We see through this method that some positions are posted on a Monday and they'll have a person in the seat the following Monday. Again, we have lots of large employers using this, Bosch, DTE Energy, a whole host of kind of large Fortune 500 companies using the system, but predominantly we have over 10,000 companies who use this in the last 2 years with an average size of 42 employees, right? And we know that, again, 5 to 500 employee firms represent about 65% of of all the jobs posted in America. So our goal here is to make this simple enough to be able to engage in economic development and kind of our educational kind of workforce development systems, create a way that we can engage a broader array of companies. So it's not just the names we know. And while Target and Medtronic and all of those institutions represent a tremendous amount of opportunity, again, we see a lot of companies that could be tapped to provide our workforce opportunities that are not participating today.
So
we have a question from Representative McDonald. If you can wait. Okay. McDonald first.
Go.
Okay.
I'm going to ask Brian to expand it one more
Isaacson
part.
First.
Thank you, sir. Yeah. Can you share with them the University of Minnesota and the company that was hiring there, and then they found that they were actually better off hiring elsewhere based on the
University of Michigan.
Oh, my bad. Yeah. My bad.
Yeah.
Wrong U of M.
The other U of M. I'm sorry. I'm told that that's the real U of M in the Big Ten here. So, so we found that an employer was spending a lot of time going after University of Michigan students as their primary recruiting source, and they were having a difficult time attracting the talent they needed. So there's a lot of conversation with the governor's office in Michigan around a skills gap and the need for more electrical engineers and mechanical engineers in the state. And when they used our platform, they started getting connected to students from Western Michigan University. And at first they thought it was because we didn't have University of Michigan students on board, but in fact we had more than half of all of the engineering students from the University of Michigan on the platform. And it turned out that the company was posting jobs that required hands-on engineering work in power plants that was better suited for our directional schools, Eastern, Western, Northern, and Central, and that our theoretical kind of our research universities like Michigan and Michigan State were not producing the kind of candidates that were well-suited for those jobs, or those candidates weren't interested in those types of jobs, but the candidates from Western Michigan were well-suited and very interested for those positions. But in the history of this almost 100-year-old company, they had never hired a single person from any of the directional schools in the state. And again, just through recruiting, recruiting inefficiencies were driving this conversation around skills gaps and not the reality of the candidates that were available. And so we showed them that they could start recruiting candidates from these directional schools who had all of the skills and abilities that they needed, and we could retain more students in the more graduates in the state. We could reduce their recruiting costs, and we could help them to grow faster. This company this year, well, for the next 2 years, expects to lose 650 to 700 electrical engineers to retirement. Similar to the last speaker, you know, this idea of kind of the gray tsunami of the retiring population is affecting a lot of companies, and it's not that we have as large a skills gaps as often is discussed. It actually turns out that we have a lot of recruiting inefficiencies. The talent is being produced by our educational institutions. We're just doing a poor job of connecting in an efficient and effective manner.
And Representative Isaacs, and I think that highlights two things that are really important that we're facing as we look at how we're trying to engage our new workers out of high school and in college into the workforce, is that not only is it a matter of finding the right place, but this particular platform also drills down and helps them find the right fit. So it isn't just a matter of I want to go work for Target, I want to do X, Y, and Z, where is X, Y, and Z occurring? This will match me with X, Y, and Z, so I get to do exactly what I hope to be doing with my degree. And I think that's a real thing that a lot of folks leaving college struggle with, making that connection and getting to do what it is that they want. And so part of the reason when we bring this bill forward and have them do the presentation is just to help us understand that there's a real opportunity that's being missed right now that we can capitalize on, and I think it have some real significant play over time in our economy on making sure more folks are finding the jobs they want to do, staying with the jobs they're at, and saving, and this is the part that I really care about, small businesses a whole lot of money in recruiting and having to retain employees because they're going to get it right the first time rather than kind of having to do it, as you said, the friends and family plan, which is a great way to do an analogy there. So I yield to questions if there are any.
All right. Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Isaacson, I see that eHarmony is planning initiating something similar to this, and how would this differ from that program?
So eHarmony has launched a program. So eHarmony has launched a program called Elevated Careers, and it's focused predominantly on personality fit. And our research with the foundations was really around evidence-based matching. So we looked at what really drives long-term success in a position. And while culture fit is important, we found that really understanding somebody's underlying abilities and skills and interests was in some ways more important than necessarily personality fit, and that there were some concerns about personality fit ending up accidentally resulting in less diversity within the workplace, and that diversity of ideas and personalities is one of the things that drives a more productive work environment. And so it's a different approach, driven largely on the employer side by social media and on the candidate side by questionnaires, but again, mostly personality trait driven, which we do not take into consideration.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Isaacson, is it your intention conceptually to help close that gap of skilled labor, the conversation that this committee has had on numerous occasions and you and I personally have, in educating and informing our schools with our employers, with our students, and then at least exposing them to the great careers that are out there in the skilled labor, and in exposing them, getting them excited about and jazzed up about the opportunity of good skilled labor, the short duration of time in school compared to the school debt, and then the skill that you come out with and the ability to make money and pay off that debt and support a family. Is that the intent of this bill?
Precisely. I mean, thank you, Chair. The goal is that, you know, just a few years ago, well, we all know there's not enough people that are counseling our students to get on to what they're going to do next after high school. And it's a really cumbersome process, and for a long time, it at least on the outside appears that unless you were four-year college bound, it wasn't really a priority. And that's something that I struggle with. And I'm not saying any one school has done something nefarious or wrong. It just seems like the focus went so strongly to the four-year colleges, we kind of lost our way with other opportunities. And it's exactly what you're saying. Our job is going to be to make sure that every student has that chance to be way more efficient in making some good choices for themselves based on having a wealth of knowledge of opportunity. But not only that, you know, a platform such as this one would provide them also with the chance to really drill down into what it is that they really want to do. And when they go to school and they, or after school and they go get a job, they're going to be better paired with that. And so one of the reasons why we have the Girardi in here, not eHarmony, or the other people that are making the websites, is these people are just way ahead of the curve right now. And so I imagine, though, that the bill is written, and there's an understanding of that with the Girardi also, that the request for proposal will be put out, and people will make bids on the contract, and whoever finds the best bid will have that opportunity. But the goal is definitely to make sure that we're staying focused on getting folks the jobs that they would want to do, they'd be successful in, that they will like, and their chances of staying there and reducing that skills gap is just tremendous. There's a real upside opportunity to taking a look at this.
And then a follow-up, Mr. Chair. Thank you. So then, similar to what schools have, they have a career day where a career engineer or photographer or artist or whatever will come into the school and show off their career and get the kids excited about it, and kind of a first contact basis. So this is more of a virtual one. And in so, is it the in the programs, do you plan on having a testimonial for people that are actually in the career? Kind of like a, well, I was on today, I was looking on for restaurants in St. Paul and looking at testimonials. Mm-hmm. So I think that, maybe you already have that, I think that would be very important part for a student to read about the careers, and from actual folks that are in that career, a great testimonial to get them excited about it and the opportunities that is ahead of them.
Especially if there's a classmate they already know who's already a couple years ahead of them that now is out there using that process and then seeing that it worked for them, it would provide a lot of connection. Is that a possibility?
Yes, that's a... I think it's a great idea. What we've done to date has we've pushed a lot of the data back in real time back to universities, community colleges, and training programs to show them the jobs available and the compensation rates near them or in line with the kinds of candidates that they're seeing to try to do that kind of promotion. So that, we're showing people real paths that exist today to making money. But I think your idea of adding to some of that data that goes back some testimonials is a great addition that could be put into place.
All right, any other questions? Hearing none, Representative Isaacson.
Thank you. Well, I just, thanks for being here today, and I appreciate your guys' time. I think that this is a really thoughtful and consistent way we can continue to push on getting people back to work in a way that is efficient and getting them to do what they want to do, and really looking at the opportunity. There's just such a breadth of opportunity that's being missed in Minnesota right now, especially in manufacturing, and how do we tap into a group of people that want to work with a group of people that want to hire them. And I think that's part of what we're not being able to take advantage of, is making sure someone from Underwood can get out and do medical research in northeastern St. Paul here, or you know, precision welding someplace up in the range, or whatever the skill is that's needed. We are a big enough state that we have enough regions of interest and jobs that we should be able to provide our students with a plethora of opportunities. And I just don't think we're capitalizing that right now. And so I know that, unfortunately, we have a zero budget in the House, but I'm reasonably sure, since the Senator is the chair of the High Ed Committee, that it's probably going to be in their bill moving forward. And I'm hoping and really want to just give you a first taste of that in case we do see this again in conference committee and make myself available to answer any questions moving forward. So thank you for your time. I would renew my motion to be laid over for possible inclusion.
House File 3801, be laid over for possible inclusion.
Thank you.
And I should add one thing. My doctor is from Underwood.
Sounds like a smart guy.
Yeah.
Thank you.
All right, members, we have one more item on the agenda, and that is to kind of take a look at the omnibus bill. And tomorrow we will be seriously looking at it with discussion, testimony, and possible amendments. So you all have copies, I assume. And research did a flip of a coin. Mr. Williams, you won.
Thank you, Chair Nornes. I'm going to be walking through Article 1 of the bill, and Mr. Gehring is going to be walking through Articles 3 through 4.
Okay, good enough. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Article 1 of the bill contains policy related to the Office of Higher Education. It contains three bills that we heard in committee. House File 3237 from Representative Nornes, that's the Office of Higher Education's policy bill. It permits the Office of Higher Education to retain a portion of appropriations for administration of certain programs. It permits the Office of Higher Education to accept donations and gifts. And it contains technical changes to the teacher shortage loan forgiveness and the occupational scholarship pilot program. Article 1 also contains House File 2576. That's Representative Murphy's bill that encourages disclosure of the related to the public service loan forgiveness program to people who are public service employees in Minnesota. It also contains House File 3275. That's Representative Nornes' bill that permits graduate students to participate in the child care grant program. And finally, Article 1 additionally contains language repealing the Office of Higher Education's authority to increase the tuition cap in the second year of the biennium if there are surplus appropriations in the state grant program.
Mr. Chair, so Article 2 starts on page 6 of the DE2 amendment. Now, Article 2 only contains one bill. This is Representative Bennett's House File 2586. This is the language that relates to the use of the Minnesota Comprehensive Assessment scores for purposes of determining college readiness. I'll just note that this Article 2 that's in the DE2 right now is the current version of the House language that was presented by Representative Bennett. And my understanding is tomorrow there will be an amendment to replace this language with the current version of the Senate amendment, which is slightly different than what you see in the DE2 here. Article 3 starts on page 11 of the DE2 amendment. This is the language that comes from Representative Daniels' bill. This is House File 2896. Section 1 on page 11 is the same as what was in Representative Daniels' original bill. This is the language that allows students that are with intellectual disabilities that are enrolled in certain programs to be eligible for state financial aid programs. Section 2 is the program that is commonly referred to as the BUILD program at Bethel University. This is the MinSCU program for students with intellectual and developmental disabilities. The language is largely the same as what you saw in Representative Daniels' bill, except that in this case, the DE2 provides for a study of this issue and only requires MinSCU to develop a plan for implementing this type of program. It doesn't actually mandate the program to occur, so that's a difference. Another difference in this language is that you'll see on page 11 in subdivision 2, there's the establishment, the bill establishes an advisory group to assist MinSCU in actually developing the specific components of the plan. Then finally, Article 4, page 13 of the DE2 amendment is the fetal tissue research article, and this article contains Representative Matt Dean's fetal tissue research study request of the legislative auditor. The language that's in here is identical to the language that Representative Dean presented in committee, except that it excludes the appropriation that was in his original bill concerning the zero target. And Mr. Chair, that's it. And I'll just point out that the bill summary that was just handed out, that didn't quite make it in the packet, but you should all have now, does list out each individual bill component for each article of this DE2 amendment.
Okay, members, questions? Not a very long bill, which
is not a surprise. Yes, Representative Isaacson.
So at the risk of having obviously not been here when you went over it and asking a question that's redundant, I apologize in advance. If you have a zero budget and you have a cost to your bill, how does that work? Doesn't that violate the budget agreement? Am I wrong? Isn't there a $360,000 cost, or is that a savings?
Where are you finding the cost?
Under, am I wrong about that? For next year, not this year, is that what? Isn't there a fiscal note for the college ready that is at $395,000, or is that not the case? Did I read that wrong? I could have.
Okay. I'm told there is a fiscal note, but there is no appropriation. So.
Oh, I assume because there was a fiscal note, there would be appropriation. My bad. It didn't happen to me there.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
That's okay. Representative Wayoka.
Thank you, Chair. One quick question on Article 3. You, Joaquin, close enough.
I'll get it right.
On Article 3, the study for the BUILD program and how Minsky is going to develop it, I can't remember on the original bill, you mentioned that this language creates an advisory group. Did the original bill create an advisory group as well or not?
I don't think so. I don't know. Wait.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hakeem, the original version of the bill didn't create an advisory group, but what it did was require the Board of Trustees to consult with a variety of entities. And so what this bill does, or this version of the language does, is really sort of formalize the consulting process and actually creates a formal advisory group that will be chaired by the House and Senate higher ed committee chairs and specifies kind of what their functions are. So it's a more specific process than what was in the original bill.
And Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Mr. Gehring, remind me again where the threshold is to go to government operations on advisory groups or task force.
Who were you addressing the question to?
Mr. Gehring.
Oh, okay.
Mr. Chair, Representative Joachim, I don't have the House rules with me to actually read what the requirement is, but what I would say about this language is that it's an advisory group that operates a little bit differently than the normal kind of task forces and LCC advisory groups, because this is a group that's specifically working with the Board of Trustees at MACU. So it's a little bit different, but I'd have to read the House rules to see exactly.
I was just checking to make sure we were skipping over other committees if it need to go there. So thank you.
Thank you. Any other discussion, questions? It's only 3:30. Okay. All right. Well, I appreciate your attention and the work that's gone into this so far. I know many of you wished it had included more. Going forward, who knows how it's all going to turn out, as we need to talk to the Senate, obviously. And so far, they've been very quiet. So, hearing no other questions and no other business to deal with, I think we are adjourned.
Thank you.